Hello and welcome to the very last episode of Awin Talks, the affiliate and partner marketing podcast. That's right, we're recording our very last episode of the podcast today. So after 63 episodes of top-notch quality audio content, I think we can all agree on, we're finally calling it quits. But it's only a brief interlude before we relaunch next year with a brand new podcast that promises to be even bigger, bolder, and better. There are plans afoot for a revamp of the format and name as we aim to create a much clearer format for the podcast that will really get to the heart of what affiliate marketing is about, partnerships. We'll be speaking to a range of brands, agencies, and partners about how they work together, the results they've achieved, and why affiliate marketing has been so effective for them. It promises to offer a unique insight into industry-leading partnerships, and I'm hoping you'll all enjoy and learn something from it. Now, this new podcast will launch in Q2 2024, so stay tuned for more news on that in the coming months. But with our final episode upon us today and the end of the year drawing near, I thought it would be nice to reunite some familiar voices from earlier in the year when we hosted our 2023 predictions episode, which has actually been one of our most popular ones. Therefore, I'm happy to be joined by Acceleration Partners Chief Global Officer, Helen Southgate. Hi, Helen.
Hi, thanks for having me back.
Very welcome. Intently COO Chris Johnson. Hi, Chris.
Hey, Rob. Thanks for hosting us again.
You're very welcome. And I have mixed feelings about welcoming back ex-Awin Talks co-host and now founder of the new UK affiliate trade body, the Affiliate and Partner Marketing Association, Kevin Edwards. Hello, Kev.
Hello, Rob. Thanks for that overwhelmingly positive introduction.
You're very welcome. Well, we're all here, we've all got our drinks, we're all celebrating this very last episode of Awin Talks. Christmas is getting closer and closer. I should say, just to point out, that we are actually recording this episode just the week of Black Friday, so it's a little bit earlier than we would have anticipated, but availability meant that we did need to get you guys in the room together this particular week. So
Chris's cruise, you mean?
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
And maybe why we all look a bit stressed.
Absolutely.
Now, Kev, I was going to do a review of the previous episode that we did together at the start of the year where we did predictions for the industry. And the first prediction that you actually made on the episode that we did was that you would do less podcasts in 2023.
Yes.
And you were true to your word as you promptly left Awin and set up your own trade body, the APMA.
I've done more different ones though.
Have you?
Yes.
So you've been cheating on Awin Talks.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, most people leave a company that they've been working at for more than a decade. They'll often go and work for another similar business or start their own business in the same industry, given that's where they've picked up most of their experience and contacts, obviously. You didn't do that. You decided to set up a trade body. Why?
It's a very good question.
And are you feeling any regrets?
depends what day it is. Like, some days I think it's just a stupid idea, and then other days I'm sort of like quite enthusiastic about the opportunities. But no, I mean, it really came about because we've talked for years about trying to have something in place in the UK. In the US, they have the Performance Marketing Association, of which Awin's a member. Is AP a member still?
Yeah, we are still, yeah.
Which does a great job, but it is very US focused. And as I say, we don't really have anything here. We used to have the IAB's affiliate group, Affiliate Marketing Council, which did a load of good work, I think, presented at PI Live about, you know, just a snapshot of some of the work that we did like 10 years ago. But we haven't really had anything. I think we've suffered as a result of that, because I think the assumption is that a lot of the issues have gone away, and actually a lot of the issues remain. They've just kind of morphed into different issues. And then a lot of other issues have come up. And it's also a lot of those issues are things that 10 years ago were within our control, and a lot of those issues are now outside of our control, or aspects of them are outside of our control. I'm sure we'll talk about some of those. And so really it's a bit that for me underpins why it's really important to have a collective voice, to be able to kind of fight to ensure that our voice is heard, and not just within our industry, because we're very good at talking about ourselves to each other, but outside of our industry as well. So going out and talking to regulators, government, if necessary. So there were those aspects. I kind of piggybacked off the back of another meeting that happened earlier in the year around advertisers who close programs and then don't pay their bills and effectively go and relaunch their affiliate program on another network, which was a conversation that various different networks and agencies, I think you were there, weren't you, in the mm-hmm. meeting that we had back in sort of March time. And off the back of that, I said, you know, is there an appetite for a trade body? You're going to kind of, if we want to do this properly, we have to pay for it. So we need to kind of get some initial funding. And so I kind of got secured in principle some funding to sort of go out and do the research and do some work, put some stuff together. And then really just going out and I set myself an initial target of getting 10 founder companies, of which Intent is one, Aaron's one, AP is one, very convenient. And I got those 10 really quickly. And so then I kind of thought, well, there's no point in putting a cap on it if lots of companies want to come on board. So I just put a time limit against it. And I managed to get nearly 20 companies on board as founders. And that effectively, because they've also agreed to sign up for 2 years, that effectively secures it for 2 years. So we can definitely have a trade body in the UK for 2 years that everyone's committed to delivering the projects on and that will hopefully be properly funded. And then off the back of it, you know, a big part of my role is obviously going to be trying to go out and recruit additional members as well. So we're currently up to around about 30 members of different kind of, some have signed up at lower membership tiers, but a lot of those members are, come from like a whole diverse range of different areas of the industry, which again was something I was really keen on. Mm-hmm. So agencies, tech partners, publishers, you know, big agencies, small agencies, affiliate specific agencies, networks as well, tech solutions, publishers, voucher code sites, all of those, you know, so really good diverse mix of companies, which is really important to me. And so the next thing is obviously just part of my strategy for now and into next year is obviously growing that membership base and then kind of working with companies to deliver the roadmap for next year.
Outside of recruiting new members and getting them to fund this, obviously, what were the main challenges? Like starting this from scratch, you've never done it before. You've had some involvement, obviously, with the IAB in the past. You've got some exposure and experience of how a trade body operates, but fundamentally, you know, this was a completely new venture for you. What did you find were the biggest obstacles to getting where you are now?
I've only ever worked for companies. So, you know, it isn't just a question of saying, right, let's come together and work on some projects. If we're going to do it properly, it's like, you know, what's a not-for-profit? How do you set a not-for-profit up?
Ask OpenAI.
Well, I actually asked ChatGPT to help me write the code of conduct. Okay. But again, you know, writing a code of conduct, you know, what does a trade body do? Going out and speaking to lots and lots of companies about what their perception of a trade body is and what they felt a trade body should do for them in order to help deliver value for their business. So it was a really useful exercise in just literally going out and speaking to lots and lots of companies. Mm. And we ran 4 workshops back in July. So Julia Stent is helping me out, giving a lot of her time to help me. And she's been really, really helpful. But then I think everybody's been really helpful. There's been a lot of like goodwill, a lot of support for it. So that's obviously definitely helped. I haven't kind of felt like I'm, even though it is my business, I haven't kind of felt like I've sort of been trying to work it all out single-handedly. Just do a lot of all the practical stuff, all the logistics stuff. And then a lot of the stuff still hasn't been done. You know, a lot of the stuff is still kind of theoretical. Whilst we have a roadmap, we'll start delivering those projects next year. Well, how will we deliver them? What do they look like? They exist on paper, but what's the structure going to be like to deliver them? I don't know. And I think that me managing people's expectations around that and saying, you know, I'm working this out as we go along. What is one of those things when you break it down into kind of like the incremental parts, actually is once you do, if you deal with things one by one, actually over time, you kind of feel, well, we've kind of made quite a decent amount of progress. So, yeah. which is what I hope we have done.
So from the perspective of 2 founding members, Helen, Chris, you presumably both see value in the initiative. What do you see as being the primary benefit of having a dedicated affiliate focused industry trade body as opposed to something that's more aligned to a broader trade body like the IAB, which perhaps pays less attention to the industry as a whole, but collectively maybe has a kind of bigger influence over advocating for its own interests.
Yeah, I think even for me, the model dictates, I think, the reason why it needs its singular focus. So I think this the variable commission rates and the fact that it's very different to other digital marketing products that exist means that it needs, and it's a very different conversation. And I think that stems the need for the focus. I think, and not to blow Kev's trumpet, although I do it every now and again, we'll say, well done. That sounds weird. is if there's anybody that really could have done this and really given it the focus and attention, and actually with Julia and others that you've already mentioned, Kev, I think it's like, if this was going to work, it was going to require someone that knows the industry for so long that has been in and out with the detail to put it together. So I think when you sort of combine that, it needs a singular focus. You need the right people working on it. And if it's ever going to work here as a one-off, I think those kind of make you give it the backing because you want to see that success. And we've all been involved in this industry for probably longer collectively than mm-hmm. I care to mention on the podcast, but equally, you know, it's something that people are fascinated by. When I'm chatting to people in the office that haven't necessarily had an affiliate background that come into it, they are fascinated by the model and fascinated by the opportunity, and they are maybe from more generic marketing background. So it's a real opportunity and it's a real industry, but it needs that separate focus.
Just to that point on you talked about it, it's an industry that has a particular model and an approach and an identity, and therefore needs that kind of dedicated trade body advocation. I feel like the other side of that is that it's so diverse in terms of the businesses that are involved in it on from every aspect, agencies, advertisers, publishers, and all the different types of publisher models that operate within it, that trying to then have a collective unified voice is going to be arguably one of your biggest challenges, because trying to get that consensus across all of these different competing interests and perspectives is going to be difficult.
Yeah, I mean, the address, I was kind of clear with people, the addressable audience within affiliate is huge. You know, there are thousands and thousands of businesses. And now that's great in one respect, because it means that, you know, potentially I can go and sell membership to thousands of companies. But you're right, that is going to be a challenge. I was speaking to someone that was really helpful in the early days, is Scott Guthrie, who set up the Influencer Marketing Trade Body. Now his addressable audience is effectively, it's quite narrow. It's influencer marketing agencies, really. And his addressable audience is probably there for like a few dozen, probably no more, let's say generously more than 100 companies. And his focus therefore is quite narrow. But one thing that I was very determined around this was to make sure that, yes, the addressable audience is large, and yes, there's potentially lots of competing ideas, but I wanted the trade body therefore to be quite generalist in terms of its approach, in that some trade bodies are very, very narrowly focused in on one particular thing, whereas it was very clear from doing the workshops that people wanted to focus in on PR, advocacy, standards, policy, training, education, a whole variety of different subjects. And so what I do hope is that by having a lot of people involved, we'll be able to get a broad cross-section of people that are interested in all of those different things and can take ownership of those projects. And I do very much push back to people saying that with the best will in the world, you know, I'm only doing this for 2 to 3 days a week at the moment, and there's only so much that I can do, and really the work has to be delivered by the members. So I'm hoping that there'll be enough people that are really passionate and interested in topics to be able to want to volunteer to kind of own those subjects and therefore deliver the work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think what's really interesting about doing this now versus when we did the IEB affiliate council years ago was, I think 10 years ago, it was about professionalizing the industry, creating standards, trying to fix a lot of problems. I think there's still some of that, but I think now, 10 years later, it's more, I think the collective objective of everyone, whether you're agency, network, partner, is to elevate our industry. And I think that's where everyone really comes together. Like, how can we, you know, take advantage of the next few years by really showcasing what the affiliate channel can do? And I think for us, that's like why we're so interested and invested in it, because you can't do that easily as an individual company, but you can do it as a big group with, you know, big companies and sort of diverse range of people and businesses as well. And I think that for me is where there's real value and why it's different. Because look, to be honest with you, I think a lot of us felt a little bit burned by the IAB affiliate marketing. I mean, it was tough, wasn't it? Like, we were like working in a time where we had to deal with the GDPR. There were loads of challenges within the industry. We were trying to sort of combat some of the bad stuff that was going on, which I think we did really well. But now it's like, right, okay, how do we put our channel on the map? And I think collectively that's really valuable.
Okay. I think we've given over enough time to Kev's passion.
Far too much time to Kev.
The main reason I got you guys all in was to do a bit of a review of the year just gone and to have a conversation around expectations for the next 12 months in 2024. So let's start off with a bit of a personal perspective in 2023. What's one personal work-related success that you've achieved this year that you're proud of? And I'll start with you, Helen, but I'll caveat this first by saying that Kev cannot say I set up a trade body.
He might need a bit of time to think about it then, because have you actually done anything else?
Did pop your survey.
Oh, right. Yeah. Is that part of the trade body?
We won all that pub quiz as well.
We're really good at winning pub quizzes.
You're only working on this 2 or 3 days a week, you said.
Yeah, exactly.
We've been doing the rest of the time, so... Helen, let's start with you.
Yeah, it was interesting. We were sort of chatting about this a little bit before. I mean, like, honestly, I think this has been one of the toughest years that I've ever been working. Like, for, you know, lots of macro reasons, but I also think, you know, just trying to run a business in this environment and work with other businesses has been really, really tough. I would put it as, like, even more challenging than I think the COVID years, because a lot of people trying to come out of it. So I think it's very easy to kind of look at the challenges and the negatives, but actually sort of when you asked this question, I was thinking through what we'd done, and like, we've actually done loads of stuff. In a really hard year, we've managed, like, we launched Influencer, we launched a new Advantage service for SMEs, we launched in Germany finally after setting up the GmbH, which took a long time. So I think, like, personally, just really proud to have done all of that stuff in probably, which was a tough year for a lot of people personally and professionally.
Mm. Kev?
I actually was going to ask you, because I was chatting to you the other day, but obviously this year I haven't really had access to any data, network data, obviously. The last, obviously, couple of years when inflation's been very high, it's just naturally meant there's been growth there, obviously, because the average order value's been very high. Commissions, obviously, typically tied to commissions, and so are network fees. So kind of the channel just grew anyway, regardless. Yeah. But obviously, inflation's come down considerably. It's still reasonably high. But have you kind of noticed within your numbers that that's been reflected in your numbers, and you've kind of had to work harder for additional growth elsewhere?
Yeah. If you asked any client services teams in affiliate at the moment, I think they would say they feel like they're working considerably harder just to remain flat. Like, that is how the world is at the moment. So just to keep things going, you feel like you're working a lot harder. And I think there's obviously lots of sort of macroeconomic reasons for that, but also, like, businesses are just tightening their belts, right? They're concerned about what's happening now and the next few years. They want to get more for their money. They want to make sure their money being spent is efficient. Lots of people are downsizing, which always hits marketing teams, which is a challenge. So I think this year in particular, I think coming out of the pandemic, like, you know, we've seen organizations struggle to figure out, like, what is the new normal. And I think that's why it's been a tough year. I do think, though, to put it on a positive note, I do think going into 2024, like, there is a much more positive outlook, minus all the other things that are going on in the world. But business-wise, I think there is, because almost feels like we needed 2023 to just settle, and now, like, we've got a base to go into 2024. But it depends on sector as well. Like, we were talking earlier about travel has really bounced back, like, massively. It's nearly back to sort of pre-COVID levels. But then I think retail has had a pretty awful year generally for lots of obvious reasons.
If I can't talk about the APMA, but I can obviously shoehorn it in.
You can probably talk about what individual thing within the APMA would you say has been, like, a real personal achievement?
Well, one thing that I want to...
precursors to the APMA, it was a good way of sort of generating interest through, especially through LinkedIn, was I did the publisher survey back in the sort of late spring, early summer. And we hadn't really ever done a publisher survey before. And again, it was supported by the networks. A lot of networks sent it out to their publisher bases. It's really, really difficult to get people to fill those surveys in. I don't know what the sweet spot is. It was probably too long. We are probably asked too many questions because a lot of that data just doesn't really get used. It is still useful data for people to have because all the raw data was shared with people, which was shared with the companies that distributed it. But this year we did a publisher survey. Last year we did an advertiser survey. It's something that I want to bake into the work of the APMA. So we're just sort of, because again, one of the big bits of feedback that we got from those workshops is that people want benchmarking data. They want insights from, you know, from as big a data set as possible. So that was it's still available. It's available on the APMA website to download the publisher survey, which I did, which was a lot of work. But I think that, as I say, that stuff is just invaluable. We'll do an advertiser one again next year. Hope we potentially would be able to do both of them.
Yeah. Chris? So, I said I'd come to you last so that you had time to think about this.
Maybe I'm just too humble, you know.
Yeah.
But it is a collective effort, I suppose. But, you know, I would echo what Helen was saying around the market this year and the affiliate market, and generically just, I think everyone's now starting to take stock of, they've come out of the COVID years. They've worked their ways through that. They're expecting this year to then fully kick on, and it's not quite gone as that's been planned. So I think it's allowed everybody to take stock, to review everything. And, you know, from an ops perspective, you know, I love a lucid chart, as everyone will roll their eyes in the office when I do that. But seeing that come to life, you know, where we're creating efficiencies, improvements across the business. We've had some good, you know, international growth as well. So I think there are positives you can take out of these areas where, and also for me, I do still forget how good it is sometimes when you are speaking to clients, when you are talking about what you can offer them, how you can help them, how you can achieve their KPIs, and then seeing their eyes open, getting that buy-in, getting those nods, getting that appreciation for what you're trying to do to help them reach what they have is, you know, as tricky targets and metrics and KPIs and year-on-year growth and like-for-like sales and, you know, all the margins that we are under and working with. So, you know, personal positives, I suppose, it's really justifying why we do what we do. And I think that's been a real highlight this year with everything that's been going on.
Taking a wider view beyond your own personal remits as well, looking back at 2023 again, are there any individual trends or developments or announcements that you didn't expect at the start of the year when we first recorded that have happened over the last, you know, 12 months?
Well, I can tell you what I did expect, and it did continue, was influencer networks being acquired by many businesses. Mm-hmm. There was a bit of consolidation. I did listen back a little bit.
Oh, there you go.
I remember this. There was a bit of consolidation, and I expect that, you know, to probably continue into next year.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, announcements. Obviously, there's been some passing levers, you know, upper ends of affiliate businesses this year. But equally, I think there was an interesting one that came out of PI Live a little while ago, which was around, you know, somebody was giving an interview back to Hello Partner, I think it was. And it was like, voucher codes and the discount market is almost irrelevant, and it's not needed in this industry, and it's something that's not relevant to the market, and it's not a consumer trend, and the data doesn't suggest it. And I think that made me take stock a little bit and go, really? And I was like, well, I've got my personal opinions of how, having worked in that sector for a little while, but I'd be interested to know whether that's something that's echoed across the two people looking at me right now.
No, I wouldn't echo that. Like, this is a thing I think, well, there's two things, right? There's consumer behavior, and you, like, people shop around and they want a deal, and actually even more so at the moment, right? Like, it's probably a really bad time to have an opinion like that. So I think, you know, that will continue to happen, and, you know, clients lead a lot of that. I mean, any client website you go on, they're going to give you some sort of voucher. Like, it's just what they do. But you'll see the other side of it is, like, a good affiliate program has a bit of everything. Like, you need your sort of deal voucher, you need your loyalty, you need your content, you need price comparison, you need your influencers. Like, that's how it works. And I think to say that one area of the whole ecosystem is not valuable is definitely not the right thing to do. And look, there's been loads and loads of studies over the years where, you know, it's been proven that voucher and deal sites, if used in the right way, and that's probably the key thing, if used in the right way, can drive increased average order values. They can drive additional products sold. They can drive incremental sales. I don't think you can sort of broadly say they are not valuable. I just think that's wrong, to be honest.
I mean, voucher codes have obviously existed pre-internet, so it's not like this is a new thing that has just been invented
pre-internet.
Like it's a new thing that's been invented by the affiliate industry. When affiliate programs are always on, you know, there are campaigns that Eamon has that have companies that have worked with Eamon for like 20 years. And those programs just evolve and they morph into different beasts, which means that their attitude over time will change. You know, the more mature programs do scrutinize stuff a lot more that's existing, established on their program. But also, what we've seen in the time that we've worked in the industry is, you know, these things go in waves as well. You know, yes, voucher code sites used to be really reputationally difficult, which is quite a diplomatic way of saying shit. But they did, back in the day, they were. And what it took is for good quality companies to come in and transform that market. And that's what happened. And they cleaned up the space in conjunction with lots of other initiatives. But it was just sort of like a collection of things that happened at the same time, which was, you know, we as an industry chose to start regulating that a bit more. Good quality sites were coming through. We wanted to shine a light on the good quality sites. And it just, you know, it just improved standards for everybody. And that will happen again. I do think there are some reputationally difficult things still within the voucher code space. But you're talking about a very broad umbrella term. You know, before we started recording, you were talking about the difficulty of classification. You know, how do you classify a voucher code? Because voucher codes are used by lots of different types of affiliates, not just voucher codes, like traditional voucher code sites. So it's way more nuanced than that.
And there's also a kind of a semantic thing around what's valuable, right? Because what's valuable to one business is completely different to what is valuable to another. So I know that this conversation is talking about it at a very kind of like macro aggregate level, but ultimately, if you're a business and you're looking to acquire new customers, then a voucher code can be extremely valuable in kind of capturing that market from a competitor. If it's about trying to increase average order values or something, again, if you're using it in a sophisticated, smart way, then again, it can be really valuable. And it's, I know that the person who, and it's Edwin McFarlane, he'll appreciate the shout out, but he'll be happy that this has provoked this conversation, this debate, right? And that's, I think, you know, a lot of the reason why he kind of probably said it in the first place. But it's a conversation that definitely needs to be had, I think, across the industry, because it is something that's more nuanced and goes down to the individual level.
I wouldn't say it should lose focus. I think when you're talking about, you know, looking at the space in particular and making sure that it was doing everything in the right interest, I think there probably could be some work to be done on the space itself. But, you know, I looked at the data on the back of that post, and I was looking at the Google Trends data around, you know, people searching for cheap and best and discount and all right, it may have slowed down slightly in the last couple of years. It's still a very high consumer and mass consumer trend. And actually, even from our side, you know, it's a conversion tool. A code is something that will get you over the line. And when you consider, especially from a brand perspective, if your opportunities are when people aren't as brand loyal as they used to be, if products exist on many places, you know, you've got Amazon who, where, you know, around Black Friday times, people are waiting for Amazon to go first before they make their move, because they know that they've got to capture that audience at the right time and capture the attention to make sure they are considered as part of that purchase. So it's definitely a conversion tool. And that's why, it was an interesting announcement, let's say.
And also, as I mentioned, programs are always on typically, which means that the beauty of the channel, as we know, is that you can try stuff. And if it doesn't work, you can pull back on that activity and try something else. And the same thing applies. You know, what type of voucher do you offer? Stretch and save, you know, spend a certain amount to get a certain discount. Is it a fixed amount? You know, again, there's science around which works better, all of these different things, what they work better and how they influence consumer behavior. So it's a lot more complex than that, I think.
I'm sensitive to the fact that we've spent so long just talking about discounts and their use in the industry.
And the APMA.
And the APMA, yeah. That's true, yeah.
It's like 10 years ago.
Just quickly, in terms of, from your two perspectives around anything you didn't expect happening this year, was there anything that immediately sprang to mind?
Yeah, because I was thinking back when we did this last year or the beginning of this year. AI has been interesting. I think I was certainly skeptical about it and what it would do in affiliates. I've been really surprised about how many people are doing stuff with it. Like, I think there's different ranges of how good it is. Like, a lot of the stuff I've seen, because everyone's got AI now, AI-enabled technology, which is funny. And some of it is like very basic AI that's been around for years and years. But then there's some really smart stuff going on, particularly around efficiencies. And I think in our industry, around forecasting and scenario planning, like, that's the stuff where I think AI has a lot of value. And I think I've been surprised about how quickly some of that has come about. And because we've been working on it internally as well, how quickly you can build stuff of it. I mean, like, I just think that's going to get bigger and bigger. Mm. But that would be the one where maybe my predictions weren't right.
Mm.
In a good way.
Kev?
I think, so obviously, as I say, I've been speaking to lots of different companies over the last few months. And very recently, I've been speaking to a lot of companies that are focused in on open banking. And I mean, open banking, again, has been like washing around for 3-4 years now. But it feels like we're kind of at an inflection point of companies using it. And I don't mean just like companies coming in that have based their entire business model around it, but I mean other companies potentially looking at being able to tap into it to use it to kind of complement what they're doing elsewhere within affiliate. I think, you know, historically, we focused in on card linking offers, which again felt to me like a bit of a trend a few years ago that didn't really quite break through in a way that I think that we thought it might do. Same thing with influence. You know, influencer came into the channel a few years ago and it didn't quite break through, and it kind of dipped. And then we kind of had another go, but with the benefit of a bit more experience, more money being spent on it, a few more different companies coming in doing stuff differently. And so I think we're kind of at that point with open banking that, as I said, I've been to a lot of companies, and hopefully a couple of them are going to come on board as founder members as well. Well, not founder members, but members of the OPMA. It wasn't originally on my roadmap of projects for next year, but I've added it in completely autocratically. I haven't asked anyone. Just simply because having had a few conversations, I think there's a lot of there's a complete lack of knowledge around what it is, how it works with network tracking, what reporting looks like, what are the concerns around data, you know, what are the FCA regulations around it, all that kind of stuff.
And the distribution as well, double dipping as well, and all these other things that aren't always considered.
So I think there's a huge education piece there, but there's also a huge opportunity as well. And so I've kind of been like pleasantly surprised, because as we know, you get different waves of activity coming through the channel over time, and this feels like it's kind of another one coming through that could be quite big.
Now, you're all three of you, I think you self-described cynics, generally speaking. Your outlook on
speak for yourself.
Yeah,
we never said that, did we?
Never say that? I think we said it. I think other people said it.
Other people have described you as cynics.
It's fair.
Looking ahead to the future, what do you see affiliate marketers' main challenges being in 2024? Chris, do you want to start?
It's hard to look away from tracking.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I can use that in a very macro term, but I think that's something that is really on radar at the moment. And I feel the justification is there for us to be continually talking about it. I think I was reading something yesterday around Google. About 1% of its traffic, Chrome traffic, will see third-party cookie blocked from Q1, and then Q4 will be 100%. Mm-hmm.
Oh, really?
So third-party tracking.
2 months away.
It's over.
We actually talked about this, I think, at the start of the year, as to kind of like whether or not we thought they would finally go ahead and deprecate third-party cookies.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a bit of speculation, you know, no, they're going to postpone it again. You know, Google have done it for so many consecutive years now. It feels like the end is legitimately nigh now.
Yeah, and there was an article yesterday in the BBC, if I remember rightly, around consent models and the accept or reject or making that more accessible and more visible to consumers as well. And they've got a few companies that they're looking at in the next couple of months that they've spoken to, aren't naming them, but to really consider an accept all model and a reject all, and how that's considered. So there is a lot of more pressure consistently now on tracking methods and how we are as an industry going to deal with that, because we are, whether we like it or not, it's a fundamental part of our of our industry.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, the word, I think I've used the word existential probably way too much in the past, but it is an existential threat. It's difficult to kind of look beyond tracking. The problem that I think that we have with the tracking within our industry is that actually we offer pretty good, from what I can tell, pretty good solutions as a channel. But we typically kind of get lumped in with everybody else that thinks that our tracking is just going to fail overnight. Fact is, it isn't. I mean, I know that AWIN, I'm sure other networks do similar, invest heavily in looking at future-proofing tracking, what's coming down the road, trying to come up with new solutions. There are a variety of solutions. I think the problem we have is that all companies talk about them in different ways. So it's very difficult to understand actually who does have best-in-class tracking, what does best-in-class look like.
And it's dependent upon the user context as well, right? What device are they accessing it, or which browser are they using? Are they in an app? There are so many different contingent variables. Yeah. Now the tracking has to be, by its very nature, a very malleable, flexible, yeah, configurable solution. Means it's more complicated.
Yeah, I mean, I when I talk about tracking, I very much see it as like an umbrella term for so many different aspects within it. You mentioned consent banners, you've got still got ad blockers, you've got browser settings across different browsers. So there's multiple different elements to that. And then there's multiple different ways how you classify affiliate cookies as well. If you're a cashback model, do you classify it differently to a voucher model, to a content model? Can networks separate out those different types of activity? Do they just automatically all get lumped in together? Are you speaking to the right person, advertiser side? Does the advertiser actually understand it? Or again, one of the things that we always say is that affiliate sits lower down the food chain, which means that actually do CMOs actually really understand what affiliate is and actually how it tracks? So it is going to be a core focus for us for next year. And what I want to do is ensure that it's not just going to be like a one-off project that we deliver, but we consistently deliver insights, education, training, case studies, et cetera, across the course of next year.
I mean, we've had conversations in the past, I think, around should tracking, I don't know if it's explicitly promoted in this way necessarily by affiliate platforms and networks, but that it shouldn't necessarily be like a competitive thing.
No.
The industry needs to come together and agree upon broad standard principles around what tracking looks like. So there's alignment there, which helps the education piece.
Yeah.
And it also standardizes the functionality of it
as well. And other industries do that, magazine and newspaper readership, TV viewing figures are all done by a single body. And that's the de facto yardstick against which everything's measured. It does get quite thorny, all of those conversations, because you're dealing with, as soon as you're dealing with anything that's potentially commercially sensitive, it becomes difficult to have those conversations for obvious reasons. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I agree. I think that we do need to have, and we're going to need to involve CEOs in those conversations as well. It's going to have to be very much a top-down thing. So there's a lot of challenges there, but I still am really quite positive about our opportunity to shape how we talk about tracking within our channel to the wider industries.
And there's encouragement around third to first party tracking as well, and really making sure that brands understand how they are currently tracking sales and where there is opportunity to reduce that. And I chat to cashback guys a lot, and the number of untracked sales that they see from certain retailers, and the effort that has to go into to create, it's a service, and that they're still trying to create that service and offer that value, but then that's just, if anything, increasing as well. So there's a lot of challenges, and I think it is a big question, and that we need to collectively focus on next year. I don't think we can get away from it.
I guess one of the, maybe it's a question for you both, because this is a bit I've always struggled with, right? So it's so important, particularly for networks, because that's how they make their money, but also the platforms, to get their tracking in a good place and work with the clients to do it. Why don't they push it more? Because it feels like it's coming from the publishers, right? Because they're the people right at the end feeling it. Why don't the people that are doing it push for something better? I don't know. I don't know what the answer is.
I'm sure people do. I mean, having worked at Awin, it was part of the company's targets, you know, based around getting whatever percentage of revenue.
Yeah. Oh, do you mean from a network perspective or an advertiser perspective?
Network and platform. Because they're the people speaking to the client about the technical integration. But then I guess maybe that's a problem. Maybe they're not the right people to do it. I don't know.
I think there's an element of the fact it's marketing people often talking to marketing people rather than people talking to technical people. And I think stuff gets lost in translation. And I do think there's a fundamental understanding about making sure that the right people are talking to the right people. And that it also becomes a core focus, because tracking is kind of seen as like, I don't understand tracking. It seems like quite a boring thing. Like the reason that product feeds are so terrible is because it seems like a boring topic within the channel. But actually, it's a really useful, really valuable driver of the affiliate sales, and it helps drive affiliate, innovative affiliate models. So I think the kind of less sparkly stuff tends to kind of get a little bit shunted to the side.
I don't know about third. I don't know the integration of it, and this is maybe where you can. I don't know, how easy is that to go from third to first party tracking? You know, how much work is actually involved in that particular task in itself?
What, first party cookies? Well, I mean, Awin's had it for more than a decade.
But I mean, in terms of an advertiser actually changing it on their side. Mm. Yeah, I mean, I think it can be, depending on the setup of the advertiser's tracking setup and their own e-commerce site. I think it can be quite a complicated thing. Any change like that, and this is partly why, you know, solutions like the master tag in terms of getting intently implemented on an advertiser site are such a shortcut to access and activation. Anything that involves kind of changing elements of an advertiser's website are always going to run up against kind of internal bureaucracy, internal prioritizations.
And I totally get that, but equally, I'm like, you know, and putting new partners on board and putting new tech stacks in place and putting this and that in place. So all you're doing is upgrading an existing provider. And I don't know the detail, and I'm probably.
I think the technology of it is probably easy. I think it gets put down the list because we don't sell it well enough. Like, because if you put yourself in a client position, I think the challenge with it is, I know we all don't agree with this, right? But the challenge is you go to a client and go, you're not tracking 25% of sales at the moment. Can you track 25% of sales and now pay on that 25%? Yeah. And like, it's not a priority, right? Like, I get it. That's not the right way to view it. But then I think we need to go in with a, like, if you do that, I can guarantee you that we're going to be able to optimize our partners better and you're going to drive even more revenue. I think the way we sell it is probably not the right way, but that's one to put on your list.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's definitely part. I mean, it's the reason why I don't think people track app sales, because it's like, well,
now I've got to pay for it.
I've been getting those for years for free. Now I've got a, and it's, I think that, you know, I think you have to assume goodwill. I think you have to assume that advertisers do, by and large, want to do the right thing. But it's difficult. But to your point, I think, you know, a good case in point about how good tracking done well. that's something
good tracking well done.
Good English.
that's not good words. But a good case in point is the reason that your business has done so well. One of the reasons your business has done so well is because the networks had tracking in place, which was easy for you to get integrated without having an advertiser having to integrate you. Mm-hmm. And so it kind of demonstrates that, you know, with the right kind of thinking with creative people, if you can do remote integrations, then that, I mean, I say I'm not a technical person, so I don't know, the success of your business is a good case in point about how good tracking can actually drive innovation.
Container tags, you know, they've been, if you used them by many for a while, and I think others are still coming to the party, but it's a case of, and we know how long it takes to get these integrations in place with some brands, and we know how long it takes ISO frameworks and content security policies and whoever you're speaking to internally. And again, I mean, we spend a lot of our time not speaking to the affiliate managers within businesses, even though that's what the model, you know, how we get paid. Essentially, it is about getting that understanding and buying across that whole retailer setup. And it's, you know, you're speaking to CMOs and you're speaking to UX directors and you're speaking to web user experience teams that are based in somewhere that you didn't know existed, and that they're running analytics as well and experiments, and you know, and you've got to make sure that when you do this, people are aware. So it's, that used to be our trickiest challenge back, you know, a fair few years ago, was getting the tag on site, even with the GTM. Now it's a case of, okay, that's not the hard part, which is great. And actually that's, you know, I think supporting everything that we're doing with the industry. But now it is about how you how you get that buy-in to go further.
Let me move to more of a positive slant and ask you where the biggest opportunities for growth in the industry are that you see next year. Helen, what's your take on that?
So I'll start with negative and I'll go to positive, because I think I'm that kind of person. Because it's kind of like, so I think we will have a lot of macro challenges next year still, like economically, I think, particularly UK and Europe. I think maybe US not so much. I don't know if you knew this, but I was reading this earlier. There's 70 elections next year in 2024. Yes, it's like half the population of the country is voting.
It's the biggest year ever for democracy being... People voting.
To democracy. Hopefully.
Good work.
Yes, well done. So we can't ignore that. Like, I think, that affects confidence either way, from consumers to businesses and everything. Like, I think it's going to be another bumpy year. But I think the opportunity for affiliates or affiliate marketing in that is, like, we're really good at navigating that stuff. Like, we have such a diverse industry. You know, we can figure out where your budget should be best. You can pull things, you can test things, you can mess around with stuff and see what happens. Like, I think taking the opportunity of the sort of turbulent time and putting affiliate like as a channel where, you know, we'll do our best for you is really important. But I think to do that, and this is the opportunity really, is to crack the incremental question. Like, if we can really show that affiliate marketing is incremental, adds value, you can use it to leverage across the entire year, it can help you when you're doing well, doing bad, then I think, you know, that is where budgets will go next year. Because as a client, I would much rather put my money in affiliate channel than some of the other channels at the moment, which are much harder to predict and control. So I think that is hopefully our opportunity, but we've got to make the most of it. So Kevin needs to sort that out in his APMAs.
That's the list.
Just to pick up on that comment, actually, you mentioned about the diversity of the channel.
Yeah.
And I do wonder sometimes the way that the industry is evolving and moving and becoming broader, incorporating more and more different publisher types and where they sit in the usual customer journey, does proving incrementality then become more difficult because of the number of touch points and the number of different ways people are interacting with those affiliates? How do they each kind of prove their worth to the advertiser, particularly those that are further away from that conversion action?
Yeah, like, I think proving incrementality is difficult, full stop. And I actually don't think anyone's cracked it very well, because the challenge with it is it means something different to everyone. Like, every client has a different view of what that is. But I actually think that's an advantage, that we as a channel are at more touch points because we have so much more data. And I think having that broader range of data means we can be really smart and say, look, we really think this is driving value for you as a client, but we think you should move your budget here. Like, I actually think it's a huge opportunity to have that sort of broad range of
data. Can be quite siloed as well, and historically publishers have been fairly protective of their data.
That's
and also throughout the whole GDPR thing, we sold ourselves as being a relatively data light channel. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of swings and roundabouts, really. But coming back to the open banking point, open banking can help demonstrate some of that stuff.
Yeah.
You're tracking people's purchasing behavior over time and seeing how different mechanics influence that. So
yeah,
that's an additional data set that we can potentially pull in.
Mm.
I think a lot of it's got to be led from the brand as well, you know, and actually what is incrementality, you know, for each, every case is different. A lot of things we've done this year, they've been based on completely different outcomes and the results that they're looking for. And so it's not a one size fits all. It really isn't. No. And you can't, I don't think we'll ever get to a point. Yes, we need to create some best practices and sort of case studies, but equally every retailer is different and every retailer has a different version of what's successful and what's not. And then you work to try and make sure that filters into it.
Depends how mature your program is as well. Programs are always on. You get one person that might be leading the program, they then leave and their views are different to the next person coming in. And, you know, it's always on program. That means that the account team handling it has to automatically switch overnight to potentially working towards different metrics. So there's a lot of complexity in there.
Yeah. Two very quick comments from you on opportunities for next year. Where do you see them? I mean, is it open banking for you again?
No. Another thing that I want to focus in on next year, and I think it's quite challenging to prove because you don't know what you don't know. But one thing I'd love to see is companies pay publishers faster. I think that it's something that we've really struggled with. It's patchy. I mean, well, you'll know.
It's patchy. You can typically see, if you're a cashback user, you can go on and very often it will say you won't get paid your cashback for 6 to 8 months, potentially even longer. And what I'd love to be able to demonstrate next year is I'd love to kind of work with some companies to demonstrate that if you pay people quicker, those companies can reinvest that commission in their business, expanding their business, working on new technology, developing new propositions. And the faster you pay people, actually that has a positive impact on the overall growth of the channel. And so I'd love to, I don't know that it's going to happen, but I'd love it to kind of almost be like the next kind of USP that companies are fighting for next year, to be able to pay people quicker.
Could be something to insert into the next publisher survey.
Yeah, maybe.
It's very difficult
to prove, but like a good example, to coming back to mention Julia earlier, she does some consultancy for Genie Ventures, and Genie Ventures has Genie Goals, who are Genie Shopping, who you do the CSS work, and that's obviously, they're having to go out and arbitrate. They have do arbitrage for the cost. There's a direct cost to them of buying the traffic, which they then arbitrage against the return on investment. Now, so therefore, they need cash flow to deliver that. And yes, they're a cash positive company and a great company, but they literally have to go out and get a massive bank loan on the proviso that they might get that money paid to them in months and months. Mm-hmm. And you think if they could get that money guaranteed to them, yes, there might be an additional payment in order to get it, but if they had that cash flow coming through, how much quicker can they build campaigns or reinvest in campaigns? And which obviously that has a positive impact on the size of their company, whether they can hire new people, whether they can build new technology out, new solutions, all of those kind of things. I'd love to be able to demonstrate that next year.
USP as well, and as a client, like if you're in an industry where it's very competitive, like an affiliate is going to work with a client that pays them quicker over someone else, even if they pay more. Like,
do you think,
huge opportunity.
Do you think speed is the ultimate goal here, or reliability? Because I would say that, like, getting paid 2 weeks after a sale 1 month, and then getting paid 8 weeks after a sale another month, is almost more unhelpful than knowing that I'm going to get paid 6 weeks every month.
I think you've got consumer standards, right? So it's sometimes the how that's dictated is going to change. It's retail, it's going to be 30-day return policies. It's utilities and broadband, you've got 14 days. If it's travel, it's going to be when they've been on holiday. I think, I think any affiliate business, seasoned affiliate business, you will take that into account, and you will factor that into your finances. I think it's I'd take more reliability, to be honest. I think, again, that justifies the channel. You're getting more out of it. We're seeing more results, more numbers. You're doing more with them. Yeah, it's still something definitely that's worth looking into. But yeah, I mean, if I was to choose tracking reliability, the speed of payment right now, we've made a lot of, there is, acceptable options in the speed of payments, but sure, it could absolutely be quicker, but I would probably go down the reliability route first. Mm-hmm.
There are certain ways around that. I remember when we launched Travelodge on Awin, and it was because they didn't have the ability to kind of do it, which is going to be too time consuming and too manual. We baked in the returns rate, also the cancellation rate within the commission. We did identify, high ticket bookings. We individually went through them and verified them, but we were able to bake that in, which meant that we were able to validate the sales a lot more quicker. And yes, you do need to put additional monitoring in there to make sure it's not being abused. But it meant that we were able to validate the sales a lot quicker and obviously pay publishers a lot quicker.
Mm. One very, 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 very quick, because Kev did not heed my advice.
Sorry, he doesn't want to speak much, does he? Yeah. Today, I don't think. No, it's fine. Connected TV, I think, would be interesting next year. I know, and it's nothing that necessarily we've got a lot of experience in, but I've sat on enough panels this year with some connected TV employees. And I think that's a really interesting space that I think will, if people haven't looked at it, we'll be looking at that a lot more. And I think there's opportunity there to grow. People aren't watching real live broadcasts as much anymore, and instead they are watching, streaming TV much more. So yeah, connected TV is a very interesting
market.
And
there are more and more like ad supported tiers being kind of rolled out by a lot of those streaming companies as well, which I think is going to open up more.
And lots more performance based stuff, which I think is really interesting.
I think that would be great. And then the last thing I'll say is brand to affiliate, brand to publisher partnerships, not as a individual thing, but more as a, because there's so many more justifications and buy-in and relationship building that we need to do. I think partnerships as a general term is going to increase, because you have to then spend more time getting to know your partners, even more so than we do already. And I think that will be an opportunity for the market next year.
Okay, thank you. That's about all the time we've got for today. One quick question for you all before we finish, though. Whilst Awin's flagship podcast is on hiatus, do any of you have any podcast recommendations for our listeners to get their regular hit of affiliate or wider marketing and business insights and content?
What's the other network one? Listen. Sorry, I should go first after that, shouldn't I? Yes. I think, well, mine's not necessarily industry, I suppose, but if I listen to any podcasts, I know people talk about more mainstream ones, but I love On Brand, which is a Rory Sutherland podcast. So it's behavioral science, behavioral economics, individual brands, conversations, really interesting. And I learn a lot from that, and you know, how brands approach certain objectives and criteria. And I, maybe judging by the reaction there, maybe a few of you haven't heard of that. Right. So yeah, give that a listen.
Mm. Kev?
I've just been too busy, Rob.
Okay.
Launching the Helen, mate.
You work like 2 days a week. Affiliate-wise, there aren't a lot, but I would give a shout-out to Martech Record. I think what Mike's done there is really good. It's a bit US-based, but he's starting to sort of think more globally. Business-wise, if you can get over how annoying he is, Steve Bartlett's actually quite a good one. Oh, he interviews some really good people. Yeah, I've sort of got used to it a bit, but like the people he interviews are really good. Like, it's a great one from Shopify recently. So I would say those. And if you want to feel a bit stupid and a bit more humble, then the Intimate Monkey Cage is absolutely brilliant. But I understand about 20% of it. Okay. So.
Brian Cox.
Brian Cox.
I can't listen to that.
From a business perspective, I really enjoy The Uncensored CMO. That's a good one.
Yeah, that's a good one.
It talks a lot about kind of branding, positioning, all that stuff that I'm quite interested in. Sharp Tech is a very good US, very big US line on it, but the guys on there really unpack like the latest developments in technology right now and the implications for businesses globally, and that's a really smart one as well. So yeah, those are two that I would definitely advise. But obviously we'll be back in the new year with our new podcast, so stay tuned for that. Well, thanks again for coming into the office today for this very last special episode. And thank you to our listeners that have tuned in over the last 3 years to Awin Talk. I think it's about 3 years now, isn't it? It's been a while.
I think it's longer than that.
Is it? God. 4 years. 4 years. Wow. And finally, a big thanks to our producer, Mike, and his team who are here recording in the office with us today and do so much of the work in the background, cutting, editing, making this podcast sound as slick and professional as it does, I think. I think it does.
It's not always easy, but
To be honest, the podcast started out as a pretty scrappy affair with Kev and I simply wanting to see how we could experiment with creating content in a new audio format. It's since evolved and grown to its current position as, I think, completely impartially, one of the best affiliate-focused podcasts out there. I'm sure everyone in the room would agree.
I feel like I'm going to cry.
Yeah. That's a bit quite sad, isn't it? End of an era.
I'll be sad to see it go.
When's the cake coming in?
Yeah.
Later. But as I mentioned at the start of the episode, we'll be back in 2024 with a completely new podcast that I think will be even better. So look out for news of that in March next year. And in the meantime, have a wonderful Christmas and New Year. And I look forward to bringing that new audio content to you then. So it's goodbye from me. It's goodbye from Chris.
When do you need us back on for the next one? Goodbye.
Goodbye from Kev.
Cheers.
And goodbye from Helen.
Goodbye.